D3. The seven synonymous terms for God. Symbols of the dimensional translatability of God. Number 1A.
Now, I first want to thank you for inviting me to come to New York, and this gives me perhaps the opportunity just to introduce the work we want to do today and tomorrow by telling you how this invitation came about. I was touring America in different places. I gave classes on the main subject of divine cybernetics. And while I was up in Boston and giving a class, somebody from here felt that it would be nice if that subject could be somehow complemented, enlarged, by talking about the value of the seven synonymous terms for God and the necessity of studying those seven synonymous terms. Now, this has one little disadvantage which I want to point out, and this is that those who have been up in Boston, I don't know, perhaps a fourth or a third of the people who are here, have heard already a little bit of what I'm going to say this morning, so there may be a slight repetition, and so I ask those who have been up there to excuse that, because I have to introduce the subject somehow in a similar way. Now, the subject is the seven synonymous terms for God in science. The whole subject which we are interested in is the one infinite being. We start out from the proposition that being is one, and that there is but one being. And that's that. And we are not going to deviate anymore from that standpoint. So the whole weekend will be talked from that standpoint, that being is one, and that we are not going to try to make out of dualism a sense of monism or monotheism or anything like that, but that our great starting point is that very fact that there is one being, one universe. Now, we know perfectly well that if we have that consciousness of the one being, that then that one being includes within itself everything which is of the nature of that one being, and consequently is a harmonious one being. And it is actually that which mankind tries to get hold of, namely that harmony which underlies the oneness of being. Now, how on earth do we experience that harmony of the one being? Because even if we intellectually admit that being is one, and not only the spiritual thinkers place themselves on this proposition, but also many of the new physical and natural scientists begin to realize that there is only one being, though, therefore, as I say, we may intellectually or theoretically admit that there is just oneness of being, we still have to ask ourselves, but how can I experience that? Now, we know that all experience is what we have in consciousness. Therefore, that consciousness determines that which we experience. So, it isn't so much only to see what that one being is, theoretically, but it is also the great question how to align consciousness to that very fact, those very constituents which constitute the one being. So let's be aware that all is consciousness, and therefore we experience that which we have in consciousness, Therefore, if consciousness is atoned or aligned or reconciled or at one with that one being, then naturally consciousness takes part of all that that one being contains, how it operates, and we know it operates always harmoniously and perfectly. So the great question which therefore is put before us is first, what constitutes that one being which is consistent within itself, and second, that we have a unity of consciousness with that one being. Now, these two points are really that which in its highest scientific declaration is what Mrs. Eddy calls that principle and idea is one. Namely, that principle or that one being and idea, namely the way this principle manifests itself to consciousness, is one. And so her great two terms which she introduced and which the Bible didn't know are principle and idea. Really, Mrs. Eddy was quite aware that what she had been seeing, what has been revealed to her, was a step forward from the Bible. That it wasn't not only just interpreting the Bible, but as she says in prose works, that the textbook contains not only the Bible, the whole of the Bible, but in addition to this, really the principle of being and the rule of healing. In other words, she introduced those scientific terms which are principle and idea. Principle idea being one. That's her great statement, which she made only in 1907, the very end, so to say, of her spiritual journey, being one, and which was once called God. So in this way she introduces for the name God new terms, and therefore gives a scientific definition of what God is. Now this is, I think, the greatest achievement which Mrs. Eddy has made, namely to give for the very first time in human history a definition of the nature and essence and wholeness of God. Up to that point, theology, religion has never attempted to do that. It was even foreign to theology to try to define God, because they felt God is so infinite that it cannot be defined, because define means to make final. Define, final, to make something final. And because the infinite is infinite, theology stood on the platform that the infinite cannot be defined in any way and shape and form. And you see that the reasoning seems to be quite logical, that the infinite cannot be put into a finite definition. Now, there is only one mistake in this reasoning, namely that theology still reasons in a non-scientific way, because the nature of any science is to take the infinite facts of any subject and reduce the infinite facts to such simplicity that it can be stated very clearly without taking away the infinitude of the subject. That's the great miracle of the nature of any science. You take arithmetic or mathematics, and we can say, well, in arithmetic we have infinite numbers. How on earth can you therefore define arithmetic? Well, the science of arithmetic takes those infinite numbers and reduces them to a very simple structure, namely to, in our sense, in our age to then digits and the way they operate in a fourfold way. So we can take the infinite calculations in the realm of arithmetic and can reduce them and reduce them and reduce them to a very simple system of 10 and 4 operations of addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. And in this way, state something very simply, without taking away the infinitude of the subject. Now this is the nature of any science. This is the wonder, I would say, of any science. So, in the same way, Mrs. Eddy could see, or it was revealed to her, that the infinite one, one infinite being, is that infinite being which can be reduced, if we take scientific methods, can be reduced to such simplicity as to state it very clearly what this infinite being is, without taking away anything of its infinitude. And therefore, Mrs. Eddy has taken that undefined or diffuse name God and has reduced that infinite to a clear definition which she gives in the chapter on recapitulation, right at the beginning, what is God? And the answer, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. She has reduced, first of all, the infinite to 7 synonymous terms for God. You see, up to that time, the Bible has always tried somehow to describe the one being, named it Jehovah, named it Elohim, named it Sabaoth, named it God Almighty. Jesus named it mostly the Father, giving a more intimate sense of God. But in the scientific age, Mrs. Eddy gave a reduction of the infinite to 7 fundamental constituents of the infinite, which are only 7 and not infinite, 7, something which one can grasp, and yet they are 7 which are wide enough in their meaning so that they can cover infinitude. And so, in place of God, we have that wonderful sequence of those 7 synonymous terms, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. These constitute the one being. These are, so to say, the pillars on which being rests. They are, so to say, the skeleton concept which constitute the one being. And therefore we can see that if we want to get hold of the true nature of being, then we have to see what these 7 synonymous terms mean. Now these 7 synonymous terms stand for God, therefore they are capitalized, therefore they do not mean that which common language attributes to these terms. And this is very important, because in this way we begin to realize that we are not allowed to draw any conclusion from the human use of those 7 terms in order to arrive at the divine meaning of those 7 synonymous terms. You know what I mean? We cannot take the usual term mind or spirit or soul as it used in common language and just, can you say, divinatize those terms. just lift it up a little bit and say, well, they mean God. In the common language, these terms mean such different things than when Mrs. Eddy uses those capital terms that it is no use whatsoever to try to make any conclusions from what we know humanly about those seven terms. Therefore, it means that we have to get hold of the meaning of those capitalized seven terms in a completely fresh way. We have, so to say, to have a completely blank consciousness or a blank image or conception of what these terms mean, and just go right to the book, to Science and Health, and begin to study from the text of the textbook what is the meaning of those terms. I remember that one lecturer of Christian Science Movement was trying to talk about the synonymous terms, because we are speaking about them, and he was saying the way you can study the synonymous terms is that you take a term and just think about what it means to us, and every time some quality or attribute comes to your mind, what mind or spirit or soul means, you just write them down and make a list of it. That's humbug. We never arrive at deity, at the divine sense, by reasoning from the human concept. Therefore, there is revelation in the textbook, and revelation means that truth revealed itself completely new to human consciousness, and therefore we have to take the textbook as what it stands, and form a completely new conception of what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love mean. Now, we can see that really the great importance of the textbook rests on these terms, because taken only already numerically, we can see here is a textbook of 600 pages, and on these 600 pages, Mrs. Eddy uses those seven synonymous terms over 3,200 times, which means that she put the whole teaching on an understanding of these terms. So, what we could do, or have to do really, in order to understand what Mrs. Eddy wanted to teach about the nature of being, is to go to the textbook, take each reference on mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love, and just pray over these references by trying to see what Mrs. Eddy says that each of these synonymous terms express. See, when she speaks about these things, I always think about that statement where she makes in recapitulation, where she says that reasoning from cause to effect, from cause to effect, in the science of mind. We start with mind. See, you don't start with human knowledge, with human conceptions. We begin with mind, which must be understood through the idea which expresses it, or which must be understood through the idea that characterizes mind, and cannot be learned from its opposite, matter. So, if we want to find out what mind and spirit and soul and so on means, we have to reason from cause, from mind. Therefore, from the true statements in the textbook, and ask, what does characterize mind in each of those statements? And by doing that, we slowly arrive at the round, at an all-embracing, composite sense of what mind really means. We can therefore define after a while as we go on through that study and finding out more and more ideas characterizing especially mind, finding out more and more what really Mrs. Eddy's concept of mind is. And in this way, we begin to get hold of those terms in a divinely scientific way, not in a human way. It was interesting to research how Mrs. Eddy arrived at those seven synonymous terms. And in one of the class notes, which are handed down, Mrs. Eddy must have said in one of her last classes in the Metaphysical College, 1888, she must have said to that class the following thing, and this is what that student wrote down. She said that she was explaining those seven synonymous terms and said that at first she did not know how to define God, how one could define God. You see, that was still that theological sense that was lingering there, which said it's not possible to define God. And then she said that the moment she began to realize that God knows himself, and therefore that God could interpret himself, that at that point, one term after the other came into her mind. And each time she would seek further, and a new term would come to her mind, until the whole nature of God through those seven synonymous terms was revealed. In that class, she said, upon the truth of these terms of our God rests the basis of the science. See, it's the basis of the science. These are the constituents. Just as we could say the basis of arithmetic are the 10 digits, or the basis of music are 7 notes, or anything like that, she could see that on these terms rests the science. In fact, they are the science. The science not only rests on those 7 pillars, but in fact, they constitute science. Therefore, we can see that in the measure as we get hold in consciousness of those 7 synonymous terms, we get hold of the science of being, because they constitute science. Then she goes on and says that when she first commenced teaching, it was impossible for her to give her students these terms and have them in any way comprehended or apply them. Can you see what she says in 1888? That's therefore how much, 22 years after her discovery. After having taught for nearly 20 years, she could finally find a class where she could say, finally, I can teach you the 7 synonymous terms. Up to now, each class was not ready to receive it. She says she could only talk to them on the lowest plane of healing the sick. But up to that point, she could only talk on the plane of healing the sick, but not on that pure sense of what constitutes the science of being. So here we have one of these main indications how Mrs. Eddy could see that it takes for the average Christian scientist quite a bit to get away just from that initial sense which a student has at the beginning, how to heal the sick, how can I heal better, until finally thought and consciousness is ready to see that unless one understands the signs of being, that one has no basis to build on, and that understanding the signs of being means to understand those seven synonymous terms, and that they constitute the science. On a later occasion, she said, when speaking of the seven synonymous term, here is a quote from a student, Mrs. Eddy said, "If we were really conscious of the meaning of the synonyms of God, this would heal every case." So we can see here, I just read this to give an indication of the importance of those seven synonymous terms and of studying them, seeking, searching, trying to get hold of them and make them one in consciousness. I remember very well when we studied those seven synonymous terms earnestly and deeply for the first time, shortly before the war and mostly during the last war. Just to confirm what she said, when she said that these terms constitute science and that these terms, if understood, will heal every case. I remember at that time we used those quiet winter nights during the war, and nothing once did go on, where we had all the blackouts, where we had to stay home and so on, and we just pondered, studied those synonymous terms, night after night. And practically, we didn't have any more to give treatment. We could take the telephone and the patient would ring up and so on. I just put it down, went right back to the books. Just knowing that that whole thing is anyway a lie, and that all that there is going on is being. Being is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And if consciousness is one with those seven synonymous terms, that's health, that's perfection, that's being, that's God being, whatever we may call it. This is it, or this is it, and that's the fact about it. And so we begin to sense the grandeur and the beauty of aligning or atoning, reconciling consciousness with those seven big terms: God, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So here we are to see that really a study of the textbook is not so much primarily a study of each sentence in the textbook, here a sentence, there a sentence, but that it constitutes a ordered, systematic study of those great seven terms.